This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, man. We have been trying to lock this recording time in for a while, so I'm grateful that we're finally able to make it happen, man. And I'm stoked to talk to you, dude. I'm always fascinated by people that can manage multiple projects and pursue multiple things. And I understand that living on the edge of chaos while doing so is always an adventure, man. So I'm stoked to talk to you. So Kyle, just to kick this off, man, how's everything going with you?
Dude, well, yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, man, everything's been great. Just taking it easy this week and making a little bit of music here and there. But yeah, overall, just been chilling. Yeah, how have you been?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Man, I've been all over the place in the past couple of weeks. I ran a 50-kilometer race and Las Cruces, New Mexico a couple weekends ago, and then I went to a reggae festival last weekend down in St. Petersburg, Florida. So it's been good, man. I certainly can't complain at all. Wow. Yeah, it's been good, man. And so Kyle, for people that aren't familiar with you and your projects, can you just let us all know what all you do?
Yeah, so I guess, like, especially since we're here on the, like, you know, the biggest lo-fi podcast in the world, I should say that, like, probably most people who are listening know me as Love Pug. Mm-hmm. That's my lo-fi alias. I've maybe been running that for like a couple years now. But really I've been playing music since I was a kid. I grew up playing jazz guitar and went to college for jazz guitar, and that kind of like eventually morphed into a little bit during college and then after college doing more like pop production and stuff like that. So there are people out in the world who, in fact, most people who know me for pop production stuff don't know anything about Love Pug. That's like an entirely different world.
Yeah.
But if you want to find some of the stuff that I've done in that world, my like main Instagram handle, I guess, is Dry Kyle. But yeah, again, there's like, it's kind of like I have like two worlds. It's like Dry Kyle world and then like Love Pug world. So those are the two like main things.
Yeah, man. Well, I feel you, dude, because I have my electronic project Crystal Grid, and then I also have Dreamfield and Summit One, and one's dubstep and one's lo-fi, so completely yeah, different worlds. But I suppose with music, there's crossover, and I guess I mean I do a little bit of cross promotion. I suppose I have like my personal Instagram page, and I guess I promote everything on there. So I guess I haven't intentionally kept things apart by any means, and then of course the podcast as well. And so I guess for me, if people like one of my projects, that's cool enough, and they might like another one. So there's not an intentional marketing plan. It's just throwing up posts when anything's coming out. But so jazz guitar, where'd you go to school for that?
I went to USC. I did undergrad jazz guitar, and then I also have two master's degrees. I have a master's degree in jazz guitar, and then I got a master's degree in project management. But both of those I did I did both of the master's degrees at the same time, and really it was like coming out of undergrad, I had an opportunity to go back to USC, and I was offered a TA position, which, especially for grad school, it's like, I think it, for grad school and specifically in music, if you can get a TA position, then at, I'm pretty sure most schools, that will pay for your grad school. Like, they pay for your tuition, then they give you like a stipend, they give you health insurance. So when that came up, I was kind of like, okay, I should really do this, because I don't know if this is something that I would do again later or whatever. But so when that came up, then I went back to grad school for jazz guitar, did a little bit of teaching at USC, and it was good though.
Yeah, well, Kyle, that's incredible, and especially being able to roll straight in from undergrad with jazz guitar to grad school with jazz guitar. And how, I guess, with project management, were you getting both of those degrees at the same time?
Right, yeah. Wow. So when I did my jazz guitar degree, the TA position that I had paid for, like, my degree plus a little bit more. Like, it paid for, like, additional units on top of that. So at first I was looking into, like, okay, what kind of certificate program could I, like, add on to my music master's or something like that? But then I got really into project management and, like, project management methodology my first year at USC. And then it just so happened my second year at US, or doing grad school anyways, that they opened up a 1 year project management master's program. And so I was like, oh, perfect. I'll just do this, you know, because I had gotten really into project management, you know, as a whole, before then.
Incredible, but, dude. Well, and so, I mean, obviously you're using your jazz guitar education. But how are you implementing your project management?
That's a great question. Honestly, I really can't say that I'm implementing a whole lot of it. Like, I think I'm just a really curious person. So, like, I would have totally done that degree again, even just for my own, you know, like, personal, like, development, I guess. And even now, like, I have aspirations of, like, getting my MBA someday.
Wow.
Just because I don't know. I think that a lot of times, like, especially in the business world, you know, us as entrepreneurs especially, there's so much crossover between, like, entrepreneurship and music that a lot of the business classes or project management classes that I took, it was like, those were really exciting to me because it was a lot of brand new information that I was like, there's parts of this that can maybe translate to music, or even just thinking through some of this stuff I think is good. Versus with music, it kind of felt like, okay, if we're all at like 90%, we're trying really hard to get to like 91% or 92%. And and I appreciate that quest, but I didn't feel like if for example, I was going to go back and get another degree, like I would never get another music degree, because now I'm like, okay, well, I'm already doing music. You know, I don't want to get from 92 to 93%. I want to know how I can, like, market my 92%.
Yeah. Or,
like, you know what I mean? There's probably a lot of little ways in which it helped me. But I would say in a big way, I can't say that. I thought at one point in time, that I was thinking about going and doing just, like, working a full-time job somewhere, and I thought that was going to be kind of my path. But, and especially leading up to COVID, I was, like, interviewing at a bunch of places, interviewed at Disney, interviewed at Fender, interviewed at Warner, like, all these different places for project management positions, and kind of the same thing kept on coming up where they were like, are you sure that you really want to, like, do this job? Because it's not creative, it's full-time, you know, you will have very little time for the, you know, for music and, like, stuff like that. And every time I'd be like, oh, yeah, I totally want to do it. And then, you know, I get to the end and then be like, you know, maybe I don't want to do that, actually. So especially now, like, I've given up on that quest and I'm just like, you know, full bore, just be your own boss. But
yeah, man, well, what an incredible story, man. And I share some similarities in regards to getting a degree that on paper I don't necessarily use, but there was a lot of transferable skills undoubtedly. So My undergraduate degree was in marketing, and then I got a master's degree in higher education administration. And similar to you, I was a GA, so a graduate assistant, and it was really awesome, man. I went to Fort Lewis College, which is a small liberal arts school in Durango, Colorado. And during my time there, I worked at the recreation center. And so that was my job the entire time I was there. And then I got a graduate assistantship at the University of Dayton to help manage their recreation center. And my fiance got a GA position as well. So so we jumped ship and moved to Ohio for a couple of years. And it was cool, but I don't use my higher education administration degree necessarily. But at the same time, I gave a lot of presentations, had a lot of conversations with students that I supervised, went to a lot of conferences, presented at conferences, and here we are on a podcast. So I'm sure I'm sure some of those skills were transferable. But
that feels like a really good. I don't know. I feel like. Well, I should say also, I've listened to many of your podcasts. I feel like you'd be a great teacher. So I feel like there's still like opportunity for that to present itself in the future for you. Because especially, I mean, you know that like teaching at colleges, most of them won't even give you a second look unless you have a master's degree or ideally a doctorate degree. Yeah. So, which is just insane because there's so many talented people that, you know, have bachelor's degrees or no degree that could share so much information, but they're not, you know, the college doesn't see them as, you know, being able to do that, I suppose.
And I think that might be changing. And I've been out of the higher education space for, 4 years at this point, I think. But from an external perspective, I think that's changing. And especially for a lot of startup companies, it's like, if I was going to hire an employee, like, sure, I would look at the degrees, but at the same time, it's like, I want to see your side hustles. You know, it's like, what projects have you started and what have you attempted? And I think that's where my focus would be. And I think schools might move in that direction. And I have a buddy who lives in Durango, and he's a music teacher at their middle school. And he teaches an Ableton class for middle school, which is incredible. But Fort Lewis College, which is in the same town and has a full music program, they don't teach music production. And at some point, every music department is going to offer music production because it would be absolutely insane not to. I think it's insane that they're not doing so already. But I think there might be a lot of education opportunities or teaching opportunities moving forward for people that didn't necessarily get a degree in music production, but have an insane resume of credits. So yeah, it'll be interesting. And Kyle, I appreciate the flattering words, man. And I suppose, yeah, teaching, I do enjoy teaching. If there's any knowledge that I have, I certainly enjoy being able to share that with others. But, man, so it almost sounds like COVID, I guess, one, it's really cool that Fender and Disney and the companies that you were applying to were kind of like telling you no, you know, in a kind way, which is cool. But then it also sounds like maybe COVID, like when COVID hit, the world shut down, it may have been an opportunity for you to just dive into the studio full time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was like when COVID hit, that was kind of like, every way that I made money up to that point, every like source pretty much went away. Because even at that point, I had been doing, I had been producing for other artists for a little bit, and I had some like major label cuts up to that point. But I think especially in the like production, like major label production world, the biggest flaw I think of being a part of that as a producer is that most people, for like 99% of producers, you don't get paid session fees to work with artists. Mm-hmm. You get paid a production fee when the song is released. Mm-hmm. So the problem with that is then even for me is like, okay, there were all these songs that I'd worked on that, you know, were slated for like April, May, June, like all these times. And then as COVID hit and then everything just got pushed back and they were just like, oh, we'll just push songs back until everything restarts in like a couple months or something. And then I just kind of kept going. And so for me, it really was like March through July. It was a major like, okay, let's see how much I can like stretch my savings. Mm-hmm. But then it got to this point, I think when like, when the world got to a point of like, or at least with people in the music industry, maybe when labels got to a point of being like, okay, these songs just have to come out. We just got to keep going. This is kind of like the new normal, so to speak. Then everything kind of got back on track. So for me, it was like, really, it took until July. And then I just had a bunch of stuff come out at once. And then it was like, I got a big chunk of money. It was like, okay, now we're back. And everything's been good ever since then, I'm happy to report. But but yeah, definitely there was a lot of reflection happening in that period of just like, you know, wow, like people can really take away, you know, all these things for me. And I have no, you know, no outlet for myself, like no creative outlet for myself, even though I've been doing music my whole life. I have no thing that I can point to and be like, oh, that's my thing. Mm-hmm. Or anything like that. So that definitely, I think that was kind of like the beginning of like a shift for me of like, okay, maybe I should do a better job of figuring out stuff that I can just run by myself where there's as little like external help necessary. Mm-hmm. And then eventually that led to like me jumping into lo-fi. But even then, that was like early 2021 was around the time that I did that. So maybe once I had kind of gotten back into the flow of doing like production stuff and I was like, okay, yeah, this is like all I want to be doing is just music production. But
yeah. Well, and so were you taking production courses while you were in school for jazz guitar?
No, I mean, I took one like beginner Pro Tools class, but I definitely like now in hindsight, that's another thing. I'm like, oh, I went into school already like playing a lot. And even for going to school for jazz guitar or for any instrument performance, it's like you already have to have a certain level of like proficiency, even just mm-hmm. to get into the school because you have to audition in. So not that I was like, I'm not going to say I was like particularly amazing or anything like that, like going into school, but there are definitely times where I'm like, okay, I wonder how much did I improve from doing school and jazz guitar versus how much would I have improved doing school, like going to school for music production? Because it's kind of like the business stuff I was talking about. It's like, that was like brand new information to me at the time. And even now still, I would say, even though the large majority of my income comes from production and production related things, I would definitely say I'm not the world's most amazing producer, like not even close to it. Like I feel like I'm still learning so much, but I think I'm lucky in that my musicianship is at least that's like my calling card. Yeah. So yeah, but I think about it all the time. I'm like, if I had musicianship plus, you know, I knew the technical side of production better, than I'm sure that I would have been, at least financially, I'm sure I would have been a lot better off, just because I think a lot of rudimentary like production skills are really important. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, it was all trial by fire. Like I just learned from watching other people and being around other people that were already great producers, that mm-hmm. they would be like, hey, you should come play guitar on this track. And then I would sit there and watch all the things they're doing, like, oh, you reverse that. Oh, you pitch that up. Oh, you do this, you know. I didn't as much as I would like to.
Dude, and I, gosh. I'm a saxophonist, and I didn't get a degree, but I did do symphonic band and lessons and piano class, but just as electives. So I don't have a music major or a music minor, but when people ask me like what my favorite instrument to play is, I'm always like Ableton. Ableton for sure. And like, I love playing my saxophone, but like sitting down and being able to produce and having zero limitations on what's possible is it's truly incredible. And and it was always interesting for me. So I was certainly an outsider in the music classes that I was a part of. And I remember talking to a lot of these classical musicians, and there was like zero interest in music production. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe it. And I remember my saxophone professor, and he just passed away like a couple weeks ago. So rest in peace, mm-hmm. Dr. Walters. But I remember it was during a lesson. I brought my laptop in, and I think this was like 2014 or 2015. And I showed him Ableton and like a track that I had been working on. And it just wasn't like the excitement for him wasn't clicking like it was for me. And I'm like, it was like a dubstep tune, but I'm like, regardless of the genre, like, do you not see the possibilities? Like, do you not see the possibilities that you have with being an amazing instrumentalist with the tools here? And for whatever reason, I just couldn't express the connection as clearly as I would have liked to, because I remember like bringing it into the lesson. I was like, dude, you're gonna be blown away. You're gonna be blown away. Like, look at this program. And he just, you know, he was like, it's kind of cool. And I'm like, no, dude, it's evolutionary. Like, it's everything. So that was interesting to watch. And so I guess for during your time in undergrad and being surrounded by music majors, like what were the conversations around production, especially with like fellow guitarists?
I mean, I know that like when I first started school, people that were like, oh, I'm really, you know, I'm a guitar player, but I'm also a producer. Like, I don't think that, I feel like I always thought of being a producer as like, oh, you're like Rick Rubin, or like, oh, you're like, you're either like Rick Rubin, you know, or you're like Dr. Dre, or like there's only like a few kind of like buckets that you could fall into, like in my head. So I think like it really wasn't even until later when I started to realize like, oh, there's other, you know, you could be a producer but work with other producers, or you could be like a producer and this is like your niche and that's it. Like one of my best friends in the world, my buddy Max, I do like all of the pop production stuff that I do with Max still to this day. But we've known each other for 12, 13 years, like since high school.
Great.
And both knew each other from Seattle. And Max, his first ever like cut, I guess, was he made a Keys sample that ended up becoming a Travis Scott song.
Wow.
And so, yeah, which is like such an insane, like first cut to have, but it was like, he went over to, there's another producer in Seattle, this guy, Jake One, who's like legendary, like mid, you know, like early mid 2000s, like hip hop producer. But Max like went over to his place, like, and he has all these vintage synths, and Max just recorded this like Keys thing that like a few months later, Jake was like, hey, like, this is coming out, sent it to Southside, Travis Scott got on it, now it's going up, you know? And so I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, Max is listed as a producer on the song, has songwriting on the song, you know, like, all these things. And so I think, you know, got some money from the song. And I think even just for me, like, especially when I saw that happen with him, was like, it's not like Max was in the studio with Travis Scott. It's not like he made the whole beat. He made one part of the beat. And because of that, you know, he's credited as a producer. So I think like, and in general, I think that's kind of like where the music industry is now, is like, you know, if you're contributing to like the master, if you're contributing to the master, like the recording itself, then in general, you're a producer. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, maybe it used to be like, oh, if you're Quincy Jones, then you're a producer. So, yeah, I was always still thinking of like the old way versus the new way. So even going back to your original question, like when I was in school, you know, people would say like, oh, I'm working on production. And I would be like, who are you producing? Or like, what? Why would you do that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Versus now, I think I'm like every, if you're a instrumentalist, especially, every instrumentalist should just call themselves a producer and like start working on, you know, even just some like minor Ableton, Logic, Pro Tools skills.
Yeah.
Because the, if for nothing else, the difference in the way that you get paid as a producer versus, oh, I'm a session musician is not even close. Like if you're like, oh, I'm a session musician, saxophone player, you know, then people might say, oh, well, we'll pay you $200 and you can play on my song and then I'll never talk to you again.
Yeah.
You know, versus if you're like, oh, I'm a producer. Oh, I play saxophone too, by the way. Yeah. You know, and they're like, oh, send us some saxophone loops. And then pretty soon you're a producer on the song. You get a production fee. You get publishing on the song. You know, all these things that are long term. It's like those are assets that you can continue to get money from and exploit potentially, like, you know, get an advance for like a publishing deal or, you know, parlay that into other things versus the one off like session fee is just you get that. That's it. Yeah. Which, you know, $200 or $500 or even $1,000. It just it goes so fast, you know, obviously that it's like it's really disappointing to, you know, if you were to play if you played on a big song that was a hit that's on the radio and you hear yourself everywhere. You know, just thinking like I am barely getting anything from this song, you know.
Which I've made some poor deals early on in my career and there's some situations like that hurt but are learning moments for sure.
Yeah. I think everyone.
Which a lot of things have come out of that. And it was, once again, it's a learning moment and it's a dope song, but yes, those painful little moments like, damn it, this song's doing really well. I should be making more.
I definitely have some of those too. I mean, I think the one constant that I've found is that everyone gets screwed over at least once. Like that always happens. And it's just, and it's maybe not even screwed over. It's just like, you didn't know what you could have asked for, totally. You know, or what you were potentially entitled to. Combined with also, it's like, it's hard to put yourself back in that position where it's like, you have no leverage, you know, like you, worst case scenario, they're just like, oh, you want this? Well, the song's not going to come out now. And so now you look dumb, you know, and you don't get any money. But some people, you know, that are like maybe bigger than you, like career wise at that point, they could take the hit because they don't care. So there's a lot of layers to that stuff that it's easy to be like, oh, I regret not asking for this or getting this or whatever that, you know, it's so hard.
Yeah. Well, and in that moment, it's, and once a track becomes successful and you realize you made a bad deal, it's like, you have to eat it, you know, like you can't go and complain about it. You have to be like, oh damn, like I made a bad deal. And just learn from it and move forward. But so you're in LA, right? You're in the Mecca. So how are you getting plugged into the LA music scene, like as a producer? Like what does that process look like?
Yeah. I mean, I think it could look like a lot of things, because even like at first, the main thing that that I was doing was, once my friend Max had success with the Travis Scott song, then he moved to LA shortly after that. He had been living in Seattle, and we started basically only making samples, like samples and loops, to send to other producers. So at first it was just like, just whatever we could do to build our network of other producers. You know, just like mutual friends or meeting people at parties, DMing people on Instagram. You know, we connected early on with some good folks at ASCAP, and we've been with them for a long time. And they would connect us with people like, oh, you should meet this other producer who's kind of like just starting too. And so it started with mainly that, which eventually turned into like someone would send us, you know, maybe like an A&R that we were sending samples or beats to would say, oh, hey, you know, what if I sent you this acapella? You know, would you want to like try producing something around this? Or, oh, I have a writer, you know, who I know, like, do you want to go do a writing session with them? And so it started kind of like, it all kind of expanded outwards to where now it's like, we know a decent amount of writers, artists, producers, A&Rs, you know, but it is like many years of just continuous growth. I think probably the best part about living here for that stuff is just you just meet the most talented people in the silliest places. Like, I'll just walk down the street and go to a coffee shop, and if someone's like, oh, I'm a songwriter, then like first thing is I would assume is like, oh, they're really good, you know, because there's so many talented people here. Versus like back home, if someone was like, I'm a songwriter, I'm like, uh-oh. Like,
you know, dude, that's like, so funny. I'm in like rural Colorado now, but even in Denver, if somebody told me that, they're like, yeah, I'm a producer, I'm like, oh, okay. Oh,
okay, yeah. It's like a guilty until proven innocent kind of thing.
And what a fun way to navigate life where you can just assume the best. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I think like it's good. It's definitely also very humbling because like, especially growing up, like it was always like, oh, like Kyle, like he's like, you know, he's one of the guys, or like, he's one of the like three guitar players in the city that, you know, will like, you know, could do these things well or consistently or whatever. And then, you know, when I came here, it was like, oh, there's thousands, you know, it's like there is just an abundance of talent. So I think in that sense, it's always, you know, whenever someone's like, oh, you're great, it's like, I mean, you know, compared to what? Because there's so many people that are great here. That's probably the talent. And then just like being able to just run into people that have a lot of, I mean, really run into like professional musicians. Like the percentage of professional musicians here is just so much higher than any other place that I've been. I think it's a really great thing.
Wow. Well, and it's even thinking about your network, man, like if you were to draw it out like a business tree, you know, structure, it would just be insanely huge. And that's like even I as you were saying that, I was just reflecting on what kind of like my network bubble looks like. And it is crazy how over time it just continues to expand. And that's one of my favorite parts about the lo-fi community. It's still a young community. And I'm excited for all of the artists that I'm working with now. It's like 10 years from now, where is everybody? You know, not even necessarily in regards to the lo-fi scene, but who's creating pop music, who's creating dubstep, who's an instrumentalist that's performing live. And it's so exciting to be able to be a part of it. And of course the podcast, being able to share these conversations. And it's like, dude, I can't wait for a decade from now to just run an audit on like the first 100 guests and be like, okay, let's see what see where everybody is at now. And totally. It's special, man. It's special. Well, so Kyle, like when you look at how you're managing your time now, I guess, is it mostly towards producing for other people, producing lo-fi, or how does your creative time look?
That's
currently
a great question. I would say probably my time management is probably one of my worst skills. I'm so bad at it, which anyone who knows me knows that. I would say in general, like I have a problem, which is I'm just really addicted. I'm addicted to like starting music, like creating music. So in general, anything that I can do where I'm like, oh, we're making something new today, that's like really exciting to me.
Yeah.
And so I would say that I try these days, I'm trying to simplify the stuff that I'm doing. I'm trying to just, you know, be like, okay, I know that I want to say yes to every person that DMs me saying, hey, we should work on something. And I know that I want to. Even, you know, songwriters, whatever, if they're like, oh, we got to get in, I'm like, yeah, we do. We got to get in. But then it's like, okay, but I still have to finish these five other songs. So, you know, as much as I would like to do that, I think, especially right now where you're catching me, as I'm kind of in a phase of like trying to slow things down a little bit. But I think that's also maybe reflective of like, whenever you first get into anything, it's, you know, everyone says like, oh, say yes to everything, you know, and I think that's a good philosophy to kind of get going with things. But then there comes a point in time where it's like, you know, okay, you could say yes to everything, but if there's, you know, this huge group of people that wants you to do all these things for them that you are really excited about versus this group of people that wants you to do all these things that you're not excited about, then of course it's like you have to at some point kind of like divide those things and say, oh, let me do more of the stuff that I'm excited about and inspired by and whatever. So I would say, yeah, these days, I still probably like 3 days a week, I'm in like songwriting sessions with artists. And then a couple more days beyond that, or maybe just making samples and starters and stuff like that. Cause still there are some people that still know me just as only that guy. And ultimately
song starter guy.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, like for example, like, yeah, like, recently, my buddy Max met Murda Beats in a club and like, you know, which is so like stereotypical, whatever, but like, but even like, okay, someone like Murda Beats is not going to be like, oh, come do my session with, you know, Ty Dolla Sign, or like, come do my session with blah, blah, blah. But if we make an idea and send it to him and he likes it, then he'll bring that into the session with whoever that is. So still a lot of like the biggest connections that I guess like I have are with people, like especially producers who are just like, I don't want you to send me beats. Like, I don't want you to send me songs. I want you to send me like starters only, stuff that I could use.
Yeah.
So yeah, still like a couple days a week, like try to either finish songs like from the three songwriting sessions during the week. That plus make new starters and samples. And then for me, like lo-fi and anything that's just like that I'm just doing on my own, I tend to try and like fit in the cracks of all those things. Yeah. So for me, it's a lot of weekends. It's a lot of late nights, you know, staying up till 4 a.m, just like finishing tracks for, you know, whatever. Or if I'm on vacation, that ends up becoming lo-fi time also, ironically, you know, of just like, oh, wow, I got a week, you know, I could just make a bunch of tracks. Yeah, but I would definitely quantify like lo-fi as like that's like a it's almost like a guilty pleasure kind of thing of just not even a guilty pleasure, but just something that's like just mine. Then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do this on my time because I want to and I like it. So yeah, that's generally like how my time is like cut up.
Yeah, well, and So there's like for creative types, there's typically like starters and finishers for sure. And I'm definitely a starter. Like a new Ableton template is what I get excited about. And fortunately, Jared, who's the other half of Crystal Grid, he's super analytical and meticulous. And we're polar opposites, where he wants to finish a track and dial in every single detail, where it's like, I just want to write a full track as quickly as I can and send it to him. You know, like I don't even a lot of the time I won't even sit on a track for a day. You know, I just send it straight to him. It's like, I don't want to hear this track anymore. Like I spent 3 hours on it. Boom. There's something really cool here. I don't even like I'm done. I want to be done. And I'm super grateful to have Jared on my team because we get to play off each other's strengths. And he hates a blank Ableton template. You know, so I get to send him tracks that are extremely full and he gets to do his thing of perfecting them. So I guess with you and Max, what does that relationship look like?
Yeah, no, it's very similar. Like I would say that like Max is a great, he's really good at like he has the patience to sit there for 8 hours and be like just fiddling with the groove until it's like, oh, this is like what's going to unlock the song is like, you know, shifting things over this way or doing this little thing or whatever. And I just definitely don't have that patience.
I was like, oh, that sounds horrible.
No, for me, I'm like, let's just on to the next one. If it's not working within like an hour, I'm like, let's just start something new. But, But that's really something that I only, I would say the percentage of times that I would actually like push someone else to like, you know, like, hey, let's just start over. Like, I don't do that to other people, you know, because I understand other people like to sit there and finish things or whatever. Anyways, I'm lucky in that sense that Max is really, that's one of his strengths is he's like a song doctor, so to speak.
Yeah, that's great.
Exactly. And there's other people too that I know where it's like, I mean, I think really if you're a producer and like you are great at finishing songs or like finishing ideas, even if it's just like going in and like cleaning up vocals, you know, melodining, you know, like all these things and getting everything sonically to sit in a good place, there is so much value in being that guy that, the people who are like really good at doing that will like forever have work if they just get plugged in with, you know, the people like ourselves that are just like, hey, let's just like move it along, next thing. You know, because like, how amazing does it sound to be able to just shuffle things off to someone like that and finish, you know, I'll break off whatever. I don't care. Like, it's just, it's not going to get done if I just do it. I think that's like a really great skill set. I was going to say, like, even within lo-fi, like, I'll tell you, someone who I know is great at that is Bareezy. This guy is like he's great at finishing. He's great at like taking his time and really like tweaking a track for a long time until it like sits in the right spot, like stuff like that. And I swear it's like, I could just send him just crap, just like, oh, like here's me playing this like a few chords and like whatever. And he's like, oh, I know exactly how those few chords are going to fit into the track. You know, which is so rare, that people are really like excited about doing that. But,
Yeah, well, and I feel the same way of working with an audio engineer for the final mix master as well. So Jared, not only does he dial in the specifics of the track, but then he's also hitting the final mix and master, which I have zero interest in doing. And for my lo-fi projects, working with Mike from Staub Audio Engineering, it's like I send him the group stems, and what he sends back is like he adds literally, like just from the mix master alone, like 15% of the track's emotion, I would say. Like he's that good. And it's such a relief. Like I don't think I've ever in the hundreds of tracks that he's mastered, I've ever had a revision. Like I really don't. Like it's like it's a collaboration to me, you know. It's like, it's not like he's just mastering, it's like he's adding his sound to it, which once again, it's perfect because I have zero interest of sitting there and mastering a tune. And so being able to tap into the strengths of others, and kind of like you were saying, like when I first got into production, I thought that I had to do it all. And there's certainly, I mean, I'm mixing as I go, right? Like there's elements that I'm doing while I'm in a production session. But I remember like looking at a Skrillex album and looking at the writer credits, and you know, there's 12 people on a song, and I'm like, what? How are there 12 people on this song? And I guess I at the beginning I thought like I had to do everything, but now it's like the more people I meet, it's like, oh, well, how can I just, what's my biggest strength? And how can I bring my biggest strength to the project? And then how do we outsource? You know, how do we let other people do what they love? And it's a lot of fun because I'm primarily starting a lot of songs, which is exactly what I want to do. But Kyle, what I wanted to ask was so these writer sessions, what do those look like? Because I collaborate with a lot of people, but it's all digitally. Like it's all, we're just passing files back and forth. So what does a writer session look like where you're actually going and meeting with these artists?
Well, most of the writing sessions that I do, they kind of fall into a couple different categories of like, or I guess a few of either they're for, they're like specifically for an artist where it's like, okay, let's say it's like me, Max, there's a songwriter, and then this is an artist. So typically those, I suppose I'll like break down the different categories and then go from there. So let's say that's one. Two would be like a pitch session where we're just writing a song specifically to send to either a label or an artist to see if they want it. So for example, we do a good bit of like K-pop, and especially that in that world, like most songs that you hear in K-pop are pitch songs, where, you know, there's some team that wrote the song, they sent it into that artist label, and then the label said like, hey, artist or group or whoever, you know, record this, and they send them into a studio. You know, there's usually like translators that are involved, because we're sending in English demos. So there's that side of things, let's say pitch. Also in the dance world, huge, you know, because so many dance songs are like, okay, we, you know, me and this one other person wrote this top line, and maybe even the vocals are they could be final vocals, but like the track is super bare, and we send it to a DJ who's going to produce out the track and then release it. So pitch stuff. And then I guess three, which kind of is a pitch in its own way, would be like sync, doing like sync sessions specifically. Like I work with like a couple different, like, I mean, really one main like sync, I guess like sync house, you would call it, where they're setting up sessions with like me and Max, other writers who work with the sync house, and then we're getting a specific brief for like an ad spot or for a trailer or stuff like that. Which, you know, like as far as like sync pitching goes, also like if we have demos that we wrote for category two that could ever fit in like any brief that comes our way, then of course we'll send those songs in to be considered. But I think like the big difference being that that there are some companies that they specifically are like, we're going to set you up in this session to write for the spot, and then we're going to, even if the song, even if we don't get the spot, we'll still like sign the song to our catalog, and then like pitch it for other things that come our way. Which, yeah, I think especially the big companies can totally do that, because they just get exclusive, you know, they get hit up for a lot of big spots. Yeah, but those are like the three main categories, I would say. When it comes to like, I would say one and two, when it comes to like either writing for an artist or writing for a pitch, most of the time the session looks like, okay, I'm typically like, I'm either just starting with like a chord progression, or maybe recording like a few layers of guitar, and then like, you know, just something quick that is like, okay, now we can just start like writing lyrics to this, start coming up with like sections for this, whatever. But whatever is just necessary to just get going immediately. And then especially recently, kind of like me and Max's workflow has been like, I will typically like, you know, maybe I'll sit there with like an acoustic guitar and like write with some of the songwriters while Max goes into headphones and like works on building out the track a little bit. And then when you know, at the end of the session, then like me and Max will like build out the rest of the track together and like put in transitions, put on all the last like sonic kind of touches. But typically, like, I think the way that songwriting sessions tend to work here is it's like, okay, you know, you start at the beginning of the day with nothing, and then you end at the beginning of the, or at the end of the day with a song, which usually includes like, okay, you know, like recording all the vocals, you know, which that alone could take a couple hours. Like lead, doubles, harmonies, ad-libs, gangs, you know, all that. So that when they leave, it's like, even if the track is super bare, then it's like, we'll spend another like hour or two on the track, getting to the point that like we're happy with it. And then call it a day from there. But yeah, so I guess that's like, that's typically what that would look like for artist sessions and pitch sessions, is just trying to like, it's kind of like, it's kind of weird in a certain sense, because especially as someone that I like to, you know, maybe like, you know, I'm not going to sit there for 8 hours and try and come up with something, but maybe I do want to sit there for like half an hour and play around with my guitar pedals and like come up with some weird tone or something like that. It's like, I just don't have time to do that when there's like writers in the room and artists in the room and whatever, you know. It's like, you kind of just got to like, whatever's going to get the session going and like get everyone kind of going, doing their thing the fastest, that's like what's necessary.
And so that's like, that's where like a Rick Rubin type character would help with that creative process, right? Because like, what's like if you're all of a sudden you're in a room with like seven people that don't know each other, but you want to write a song, right? It's like who kicks it off? Is there like, how, who manages that?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially if it's writing for an artist, then like, I think there's especially like emphasis in those sessions on like, okay, the beginning of the session, the first like hour could even be literally just talking and just saying like, you know, especially if it's someone you haven't worked with before, which happens a lot, you know, then it's like, okay, who are you? You know, where are you from? What's going on? You know, what are you doing in your life right now? What are you dealing with? What's going, you know, all these things. And, you know, maybe trying to like I've seen some, especially good songwriters will sit there while the artist is like talking through all the stuff and they'll be like writing down notes like, Oh, tell me more about that boy. Oh, like, oh, what's going on with this? You know, or like whatever. And, kind of just trying to find some things, you know, in the conversation, you know, cause then it's like, if you can find something that the artist is like, oh, I relate to that, then that's just, the song is going to write itself compared to like, let's write a song about, you know, a minor who, you know, like did this and then this, you know, it's just sometimes those can like, it's like, oh, we have to like really dig, no pun intended, to like find, you know, find a song in that. So yeah, it tends to be a lot of like conversation and then trying to like find the gems in the conversation, or even sometimes it's just like a word, like if someone says, like oh yeah, just I hate dealing with all this drama, and they'll be like, drama, we'll write a song about drama, you know, or whatever. But
wow, man, what a trip. And I, well, and it's like, I'm, you never know what you're gonna get. So I'm sure I've been walking into the studio, you're like, huh, I wonder how this is gonna go. But so do you and Max have a manager that's putting all this together? Like, how do you guys manage all of these different sessions?
No, we had a manager for maybe like a year, great guy, but he's just really busy, manages like 15 other producers. So I think I got to a point where it was like, even just getting him on like the phone, sometimes it would take like a week or two. So we're like, okay, maybe we just like go back to kind of doing everything by ourselves. But And I think especially now, like having gone through that experience, it's like, I don't know, the way that things are now with just the two of us, like managing our schedule and stuff like that, everything has been like, everything's fine. Like we've luckily gotten to that place, kind of like what I was talking about earlier, of just like, at first we're saying yes to everything. And now it's kind of like, there's too much stuff. You know, so it's like, I think if anything, what we're trying to do is kind of like hone, like, okay, what are we excited about? You know, what are the things that we like absolutely want to do them versus the things that maybe we're like, oh, let's do one session with this person and see how it goes and whatever. I would say having a manager in that world is, I think for us, would be the most helpful for like just providing like outbound kind of opportunities, or like opportunities where it's like, oh, you know, hey, I'm placing music in this movie, you know, or stuff like that, for like all my clients, you know, or like, oh, this person reached out to me for beats for this person, like those kinds of things. But otherwise we're pretty scrappy in that we're, you know, we're most of the time doing a lot of that outreach ourselves, you know, trying to like keep in touch with like especially A&Rs and people that we know at different labels or artists, and just setting that stuff up ourselves. But for a lot of people, I think like having a manager or having a publisher that's really active in setting up sessions and providing you with new connections is great.
Yeah, well, and that scrappiness is so important. So I guess, I mean, you guys are doing so much. So looking towards the future, are you guys happy with where you're at in regards to being able to work on a lot of different projects? Are you trying to hone in a specific direction on like just your favorite things to do? I guess, yeah, like 1 year plan, 5 year plan, like where are you guys going?
Yeah. I mean, I think like, yeah, especially like recently we've been trying to, when it comes to like writing sessions, trying to hone things more to just especially like R&B and like pop R&B, like those two genres, which tends to also cover a good bit of like the K-pop pitches that we tend to get, where there's a lot of groups that are looking for like rip off like Chris Brown songs and like stuff like that, where it's like, okay, if we make something and then it happens to fall into that category, then great. Mm-hmm. You know, versus if we make a song for the artist and then the artist wants it, then they should just take it. So trying to like, yeah, I think especially now trying to just like, I guess, focus things more on like getting better at like producing in that genre. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think especially getting better on the writing side, that's like a big thing. Cause like I think that a lot of people would agree with me in this, although, you know, feel free to disagree, but like that, I think like if you have a great song, then if the production's kind of mid, it's like the song kind of can make up for the production, mm-hmm. you know, or if you have a great song and the production sucks, I mean, even then sometimes it's like, you know, it's like, oh, but the song is just so awesome. Yeah. Or whatever, that it's like, that speaks for itself, versus if you have like amazing production, but the song kind of is just like not good, or just like super generic or whatever. It's like, I don't hear that, and I'm not like, oh, that's so special, like, or that's amazing or whatever. You know, I'd be like, oh, that's a cool hi-hat, you know, or whatever, which is like not what you want when you're trying to say like, oh, that's a great song. It's like, no, it's a cool hi-hat, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like, yeah, especially in the next year, trying to do more, just focus more on like R&B and like pop R&B, kind of like that space, and get better at like writing within that genre. Just to like increase our chances as much as possible of like stuff actually sticking and making, you know, really special stuff. Mm-hmm. I know like, especially long-term, I think that's more where, for us, like having some of our like samples, especially become, having more outlets for those, like knowing more producers that we can send stuff to, but also just also getting to the point where we're putting out more like public packs. Like we have a sample pack that's on Tracklib, for example, and like even just seeing the response it's gotten there from us, really not doing any promotion or anything like that. I'm like, this is such a, it's so lucrative, or that world can be lucrative. And so many people, there's been a lot of people that reached out to us literally just from that one pack, just being like, hey, I was looking through Tracklib and I heard this thing and I want to hear more. I see that as like another great outlet for, kind of like building assets. Like for me, everything right now is just only working on things where it's like they could fall under the category of like assets, of like something that just continues to roll. Even if I get a dollar every month, like it's, I would rather get that a dollar every month, you know, forever, you know, or for a long period of time than get like $100 and then be done with it, you know, and just stack up a bunch of things. Cause then, you know, one of those things that instead of getting a dollar every month, I'll get $100 every month or $1,000 every month. And, so I think like when it comes to producing songs or writing songs, it falls into that category, making lo-fi music, making beats, you know, especially if you're releasing it yourself, you have the ownership, that's like, that falls into that category. And then releasing sample packs that are royalty bearing, like not like splice packs, you know, like, I mean, obviously that's great for like the cash grab element of it. And there is part of it that like, okay, you're getting paid quarterly royalty statements or whatever, but at the same time, it's like with a Tracklib pack, or if you put out a sample pack where people give you a percentage of publishing or master or both, then it's like, then when your sample is used in a radio hit and you're hearing it everywhere, you're not like, ah, too bad I only got 30 cents for it or whatever. So I guess that's like the long-term goal, is just building up like as many like of those things as possible. I know I'd love to travel more and like would love to, I think the more that I do things and the more that I'm kind of just getting like passive income from things, the more I see the value in building up as much of that as possible. So, that's kind of like especially the 5-year, especially my personal 5-year focus is like, is doing as much of that as possible.
Yeah, well, and just like you said, man, having your name on as many projects as possible, whether it be $1 a month, $10 a month, $100, $1,000, and it's like every time is like a little bit of a gamble, right? And when you're gambling with something that you love to do anyway, that if you did have you, if you would have gone the 9-to-5 route, like you'd be doing this stuff anyway for free. what an exciting time to be an artist and a musician.
Absolutely.
And especially if you like entrepreneurship, you know, the scrappiness of like, oh man, how can I make this happen? And just like you said, with like the lo-fi releases, like independent releases, like, yeah, like if they don't land, they're floating out there, not necessarily generating any income. But if you land on lo-fi beats or jazz vibes, and it's like, ooh,
right,
this is, ooh, I like this. This, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's exciting.
Totally. Well, and I think also it's like, you know, even the song that you're like, oh, this is getting no streams, but it's out in the world or whatever. It's like, as far as you know, 10 years from now, that's going to be put in a Google commercial, and then you won't be like, why did I make that song? It's I'm a huge proponent of like, I think like no music should ever be thrown away. You got to keep everything, mm-hmm. You know, because also even the thing that you're like, wow, this is like, you know, some weird like Thundercat meets country stuff that the world will never understand. It's like, as far as you know, like 20 years from now, you're going to dig that up and be like, this is perfect for this thing, you know, or whatever. I mean, even like for me, I have recordings of me playing like compositions from jazz school, like quartet compositions or like big band compositions, like stuff like that. That I'm like, I could use this as a sample in a song, you know, someday or something like that. Like there've been people that have been like, oh, like, do you have any like jazzy stuff? I'm like, do I?
I do. So much, man. Yeah. Well, that's Kyle. That's exciting, dude. And yeah, I was thinking of our most popular Crystal Grid track. We released it in 2018, and it didn't hit Discover Weekly until I think 2020. And then
so
it's just
funny how that works.
Just been cranking on Discover Weekly since then. But yeah, and we released it independently. It really didn't have any traction at the start, and then 2 years later, like now it's our best performing track.
Totally.
I think that's a great point, man. And Kyle, it has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you, man. And I'm inspired. I love the scrappiness, and I'm excited to get back to work. I'm excited to keep hustling, man. This was a great way to kick my Friday off, man. So, Kyle, if people are tuning in, they want to work with you in some sort of fashion, since you're at the time where you're not saying yes to everything, but you're still saying yes to some things. What's the best way somebody could pitch a project to you? What would be the most enticing thing for you to say yes to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think especially in the lo-fi world, if like, again, I love like creating things. Even in that world, I love making like guitar starter ideas or like guitar ideas for people. So if you're like, you know, especially people that are down to like flip stuff, hit me up, because I've tons of guitar ideas. Even on any day off, I'll make 5 or 6 of them just for fun, because I love doing that. So especially in lo-fi, that's the number one thing. And then outside of lo-fi, like, you know, if there's anyone listening that's like, especially on the songwriting side, is like, has a great like recording setup and you know, likes writing, then like there's always ways for us to like collaborate, whether it's just like, okay, like me sending you a beat and then, you know, maybe you write something over that and send it back and we just go back and forth like that. There's not enough, especially like good songwriters, but there's just not enough songwriters that have good recording setups out there. And for the people that do, I feel like, you know, there's so much opportunity if you're just down to like, you know, I guess just hustle and you know, go back and forth on some stuff. It's like, you know, yeah, we could there's opportunities out there,
there are,
both of us. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, I'll put your socials in the description of the bio, so people don't want to get a hold of you, they can just click through. And dude, I'm stoked, man. I for real, I'm excited. I have a few names written down that I want to link you up with, because there might be some potential there. But geez, man, thanks for an inspiring conversation, and to everybody tuning in, thanks for listening as always. And Kyle, thank you, man. I'm hyped up.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Of course, man. All right, everybody, peace out.
See you.